Hello and welcome to World Football on the BBC World Service with me, Manny Jasmine. And this week, the programme comes from South Korea because it's been a decisive week for Asia's World Cup hopefuls.
People poured onto the streets cheering, dancing and blowing their horns, and it was in a way that you couldn't even move one inch. And I couldn't talk to anyone because everyone was shouting and they were crying in a way.
Also on the programme, we'll hear from a young coach who's put his struggles with alcohol behind him and is now enjoying life in Bahrain.
Drinking was a big problem, and in front of me I was realising my the game I loved playing as a kid and wanted to be a footballer, you know, I'd completely wasted that due to my decisions and lifestyle. I couldn't go on anymore. I'd had enough, you know, physically, mentally, and I went and got help.
I'm actually in the industrial city of Ulsan, which is home to the giant Hyundai conglomerate that boasts the biggest car-making plant in the world. And here, where I've come, the world's biggest shipyard, measuring something in the region of 30 million square metres and producing something like 100 ships a year. At the moment, I'm surrounded by workmen putting together the steel blocks that they'll need to build the ships, and lorries and cranes are then moving those steel blocks to the relevant parts in the shipyard. The story goes that 20 or 30 years ago, a man from Britain's very historic shipbuilding industry visited Ulsan, but when he saw what they had here, he burst into tears because he knew where the future lay. Well, on Tuesday, Ulsan's Munsu Stadium hosted a crucial World Cup qualifier between South Korea and Iran. Both teams occupied the two automatic qualifying spots in their group, with the Koreans needing just a point to progress. But both also knew that Uzbekistan were waiting to pounce if they slipped up. The build-up to the match resembled something of a game of insult tennis, with the South Korea coach Choi Kang-hee saying he wanted Uzbekistan to qualify for the World Cup with Korea instead of Iran, because when South Korea played in Tehran a few months ago, the training facilities weren't good enough and their bus driver deliberately got the team stuck in traffic to tire out the players. The Iran coach Carlos Queiroz said he would bring Choi an Uzbekistan shirt. Choi said actually he wanted 11 Uzbekistan shirts to give to his players. Queiroz said that meant that Choi had lost the support of half of his squad. Choi said he would make sure that Queiroz watches the World Cup on TV. The pre-match press conference was a study in diplomacy. Choi, who was always going to step down after guiding South Korea to the World Cup, only made one mention of his spat with Queiroz.
아니 그 아름다운 경기는 내일 그 경기장에서 하는 거고.
I think that fair play is very important, and I'm sure that the match will be played with fair play. As for things outside the match, I don't want to add any more comment. I've said what I needed to say, and the Iran coach has said what he wants to say, and I don't want to add anything else.
그런 질문에 대해서는 제가.
Meanwhile, Queiroz was brandishing an olive branch. Almost, and once he eventually arrived.
We apologize for this delay. Unfortunately, the traffic forced us to be late here. If it was Mr. Choi, start a war immediately because he was late. But we don't complain, we just say sorry. We come here to try our best to celebrate our qualification with Korea. We come here to play with Korea. In war, you do it against. In football, we play with Korea.
But the spirit of reducing hostilities was totally lost on South Korea's wonder kid, Sun Heung-min. The Bayer Leverkusen striker promised to make the Iranian captain, Javad Nekunam, cry tears of blood, which in Korean translates more accurately as making someone regretful. But nobody told that to Nekunam.
I haven't commented on anything that their coach has said. Never mind blood, I'm ready to give my life for my country. Blood isn't important for me, I'm just thinking about my football. I don't need to answer him. I'll cry tears of blood and I'll give my life for the national team, and I'm proud to do so.
Well, there are around 2 hours to go before kickoff, and the atmosphere outside the stadium is pretty relaxed, really. Most people know that South Korea are all but mathematically at the World Cup already. Lots of families here. Poncho sellers are doing a roaring trade because today is the first day of the rainy season in Korea, and they're expecting a pretty big storm at some point. It hasn't arrived yet, but the clouds are mustering. They're also expecting 1,200 away fans.
I'm from Iran and I live in Korea for a long time. I'm sure Iran gonna win because that's why we are here.
How much do the tickets cost you?
It's free from the Iranian government.
I'm very excited because it's the first time in the place of soccer games. This is also very important match because it depends on the Korea and go to the World Cup or not.
This is your first match?
Yes, first match.
Ever?
Yes.
How old are you?
31.
You're 31?
Yes.
And how much have you paid for your tickets?
About $15.
Distant drums beat the challenge, nation unto nation. After the storm comes the sunshine, and with it the rainbow. The World Cup is the rainbow and the pot of gold at its end, all rolled into one. Just after the hour mark, a goal here. Rezo Guchon-Nejad, who plays his football in Belgium, has just nicked the ball off Kim Ji-woo and curled it past the South Korean goalkeeper to give Iran the lead. And if things stay like this, then Iran will win the group and go through with South Korea. And there's the final whistle. There it is. 1-0 to Iran. It's finished. Both these teams have qualified, and Iran, the Iran contingent here, is in raptures. Carlos Queiroz and every other member of the backroom staff and substitute on the bench have rushed onto the pitch, and you can hear what the South Korean fans make of that. They're throwing bottles onto the pitch, but Iran won't care about that because they've qualified for the World Cup for the fourth time in their history. And while Choi Kang-hee ends his reign as South Korea coach, Carlos Queiroz and Iran go on to Brazil 2014.
It was a win of a team that play with a great and fantastic team spirit, with great tactical discipline, and one enormous, tremendous determination. That's my opinion.
A jubilant Iran coach, Carlos Queiroz. So Iran and South Korea are through from Group A, meaning that Uzbekistan now go into the playoffs against Jordan. But what about the reaction in Tehran? Just 2 days after revelers took to the streets following the unexpected presidential election victory of Hassan Rouhani, it was time to get out there again. This time for football reasons. The BBC's correspondent in Tehran is Mohsen Asghari. He's been telling me what victory against South Korea has meant for Iranians.
Immediately after the victory of Iran over South Korea, you know, people poured onto the streets cheering, dancing, and blowing their horns, and it was in a way that you couldn't even move one inch in most of the streets in Tehran. They were crammed full of cars, and people were in no hurry. They were dancing and cheering and applauding, and I couldn't talk to anyone because everyone was shouting and they were crying in a way. They were distributing sweets, ice cream everywhere. They were waving Iran's flag and asked children to go on the top of the cars to wave the flags. Music were everywhere, and a lot of people were dancing in front of the eyes of the police.
And police joined the people in a very extraordinary day. Police didn't make any trouble. That was the reaction of the people.
It's been a big 3 or 4 days for the Iranian people, hasn't it, Mohsen? Because the presidential election came and went. And I suppose as soon as that was finished with, the entire focus of the nation must have been on the football team.
That's absolutely right. And there are a lot of jokes in this regard, and they are referring to Mr. Rouhani. You know that the key is the symbol of Mr. Rouhani in his election campaign. And people said that this is not a simple key. This is a master key that can unlock most of the locks in front of Iranians. One of them was the victory of Iran over South Korea, and Iran could found its way to the World Cup in Brazil.
The BBC's correspondent in Tehran, Mohsen Asghari. Well, unusually for a team who's just qualified for the World Cup, South Korea are now without a coach. Choi Kang-hee took over in 2011 and said at the time his only mission was to get the team to Brazil, and that once he did that, he would step aside. Well, he's stuck to his word. The new coach is expected to be announced early next week, and the favourite is South Korea's captain at the 2002 World Cup when they reached the semi-finals here on home soil. That's Hong Myung-bo. Lee Young-pyo, who played 127 times for South Korea, including at 3 World Cups, has told World Football that his old teammate is a bit special and believes he's the right man for the job.
I know personally about Hong Myung-bo. Hong Myung-bo is a very good person. He bring the Korea Olympic team to third place, taking the medal. And so many people say he's good player, he cannot be good coach. But I think, I'm sure Hong Myung-bo is different. He is respected from many person, even coach and then player and then teammate, everybody. I think that he's different. He's very special for Korea.
And give me a prediction for Brazil. How far can South Korea go, do you think?
I think it's very far, but I will be there into the next years. So I don't know exactly how to go there, but anyway, I will go there with you.
Perhaps I should have asked him if he'd pay for my flight to Brazil as well. That's Lee Young-pyo, the former South Korean international. You're listening to World Football on the BBC World Service with me, Manny Jasmi, in the South Korean city of Ulsan. And that is the cry of a grey whale. I've come to Ulsan's Whale Museum, which catalogues this region's intrinsic relationship with the whale, which for generations has been a source of food and commerce. In fact, it's one of Ulsan's symbols alongside the heron and, I suppose, Hyundai. But anyway, from Wales to Australia, for whose footballers it's also been a definitive week. After an inconsistent qualifying campaign, they went into Tuesday's match against Iraq needing to win to book a third successive trip to the World Cup. And the Aussies weren't short of support, with more than 80,000 fans packed into Sydney's Olympic Stadium. Amongst them was World Football's Phil Mercer.
Sydney's Olympic Stadium was in the mood for a party even before kick-off. The equation was simple. A win for the Socceroos would book them onto the flight to Brazil next year.
Excited, nervous and optimistic. I think it'll be a good game. Hopefully we get to Rio.
What's your gut feeling about tonight?
Well, everybody's pretty confident, so I'm hoping that we get the win and everyone will go crazy, so it'll be good.
Iraqi expatriates turned out in large numbers, even though their team's World Cup ambitions had already disappeared. Perhaps it was the thought of fierce rivals Oman qualifying for Brazil that prompted fans of Iraq to hope for a home victory.
Even though we're Iraqi supporters, I'm hoping Australia do get the 3 points they need and where we don't. But I've been supporting Iraq ever since we were younger, so still support them today, but I'll be happy with Australia to win the 3 points. That's our current country, so we'll be happy for them to get the 3 points and make it to the World Cup.
Like, I'm Iraqi myself, and I want Australia to win tonight, but I want Australia to win because it's my second country and I love it. I was born here and I live here. So yeah, I'll hope Australia will win and make it to the finals so I can go to Brazil and support Australia there.
With the official pre-match ceremony over, it was down to business. And it turned out to be Australia's night, but only after a few anxious moments.
They left it late, but a goal in the last 10 minutes has booked Australia's passage to Brazil. It's been a nervous night for most of the 80,000 fans inside Sydney's Olympic Stadium. The Socceroos weren't at their best on a cold and wet evening, but they did the job and are on their way to their third successive World Cup finals. It's a massive relief for the supporters and a huge boost to football in Australia.
It's great stuff and it gave me a beautiful feeling, and I must admit that I'm very proud that I'm part of this.
Hailed a genius by his players, Australia's German-born coach Holger Ossick praised his squad, including the skipper Lucas Neal, and said that preparations for Brazil would soon begin.
Thanks to all our guys. I'm happy for them. I know that there's going to be a tough year ahead of us in order to get ready, but tonight I think we have the right and the privilege to enjoy our qualification.
What does it mean, Lucas, as the captain of the team, to have qualified for next year's World Cup?
Yeah, very proud. Proud as a captain, proud as an Australian. As a team, as a nation, we get to build on the momentum we've done now in two campaigns to experience what could be arguably one of the best ever World Cups. You know, who could say it gets any better? As a dream to be able to go to Brazil, of all places, to challenge the world on the greatest stage.
Australia's chances in South America will depend not only on the older legs of skipper Lucas Neal and goalkeeper Mark Schwarzer, but on emerging talent, including 21-year-old winger Tommy Orr, who plays his club football in the Netherlands and is relishing his World Cup adventure.
Yeah, it was a great feeling. I think most of the boys are going to holidays now too, so it's a great feeling.
What does it mean to the game here in Australia that the Socceroos have qualified for another World Cup?
Yeah, well, this is the third in a row now, and it's really helping the game grow in Australia, and now with the A-League doing so well as well. It's just, I guess football is just rising and rising, so hopefully we can prepare well and perform well at the next World Cup as well.
The fans are optimistic about their side's chances when they take on the world's best next year.
This is an ageing team, but they've got a lot of passion, they've got a lot of belief, they have commitment, and I think that'll take them a long way.
And how do you think the team will fare in the finals next year?
If they can get to the World Cup, I don't see why they can't win it.
Phil Mercer reporting from Sydney. Well, as I said, it's been a far from convincing qualifying campaign for Australia, and the former Australia international Craig Foster believes the Socceroos will need to greatly improve if they're to do well in Brazil next year.
For much of this campaign, we fielded at times the oldest team that we've ever put out on the park. We've still reliant at least half the team on the 2006 generation, who went to Germany and performed so beautifully for us. We haven't been able to, or the coach hasn't been able to, bring through the next generation yet. So we've been very much stuck in the middle. So my personal view is that we should be trying to take the youngest possible team to Brazil, which has ramifications, of course, on the competitive aspect. You're not going to do as well, or you'd be lucky to do as well. But we have to, at some point, we have to use a World Cup as a learning tool for a generation looking to build to the Asian Cup 2015 and indeed on to 2018 Russia.
How important for the continued development of the game is it that the Socceroos will be at the World Cup next year?
Oh, immensely important. For the first time, though, it wasn't critical. So way back when we were trying to qualify in the late 90s, 97, even 2001 was a pivotal time, because when the team lost against Uruguay in that series, the game was insolvent. So it used to be that the game in Australia relied on qualification. Of course, we weren't there for three decades, but over the last 15 to 20 years, that everything was gambled on making this on making the World Cup, because of the interest, because of the visibility, because of the commercial ramifications. What's happened with the growth of the A-League, in particular the last 2 years, has been beautiful, is that it has now become the primary property within Australian football. And that's the way it should be. Of course, in every mature, developed football nation, it's the league, whether it's the Premier League or whether it's the La Liga or whether it's the Bundesliga. That's your day-to-day diet of football. So what that means is, had for the first time ever, had we not have qualified the game wouldn't have fallen apart and the A-League would have continued to grow and continued its positive trajectory. So that was a very important moment for the game here. Having said all of that, of course, being in a World Cup at the same time as the A-League is prospering is a double whammy.
So looking ahead to next year, what do they have to do to be successful in Brazil?
Well, that depends how you define success. Success in 2006 in Germany was trying to get out of the group, firstly. Secondly, was to go there for the first time in 3 decades and to perform in such a way that would resonate with the Australian society, with the Australian community. So we needed them to go there and sell the game in 2005. Brazil 2014 is very different. We now have to start building generations, and their great generation is behind us. The remnants of them did a fabulous job in getting us over the line, you know, this week. So the measure of success of 2014 Brazil for us won't be until Russia 2018.
That was the former Australia international Craig Foster talking to me from Sydney. Finally this week, I've come to a symbol of Ulsan's ecological regeneration. And I've come to the banks of the Tehuagang River, where they've restored a bamboo forest. Immediately, as soon as you turn into this avenue, lined on either side by giant bamboo trees, reaching to perhaps 20 metres above me, and leaning over in a sort of protective gesture, you notice the drop in temperature. It's a lot cooler here, a lot calmer here. And you also notice the silent attackers that are the black and white mosquitoes. But our final story this week is in Bahrain, whose World Cup hopes ended last year, despite a 10-0 thrashing of Indonesia that aroused suspicions and led to a FIFA investigation. So, time to build for the future, perhaps, and central to that is the coach of Bahrain's under-23 team, Anthony Hudson. The former West Ham Academy player is the son of Chelsea legend Alan Hudson, but like his father, he's struggled with alcoholism, and his wayward lifestyle brought about the premature end of his playing career. Now, though, having sought professional help, Anthony's gone 7 years without a drink and is totally focused on making his coaching career a success.
You know, as a young kid, and especially growing up, having a dad that had played and played at a very high level, seeing all the, you know, older players and that type of lifestyle of going out and drinking, and that was a big thing in my life.
Because you were at the West Ham Youth Academy, weren't you, with people like Michael Carrick and Frank Lampard, like, I guess Joe Cole must have been there at the same time. How was your lifestyle different to theirs?
I actually roomed with Michael Carrick for 2 years. And, I mean, he was the ultimate professional and a great guy, deserves everything he gets in the game. And he lived his life on and off the pitch. He was just he was always going to make it. And for me, you know, due to my lifestyle, I mean, I had to make some big changes in it. Drinking was a big problem, and I ended up going into AA. So
That's Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah. You know, I went there, it was the best thing I've ever done. And, you know, I still go and still love it. And, you know, it's been nearly 7 years now since I haven't had a drink. That was the big reason why I changed. I mean, it was progressively getting bad and just destroying relationships and eating it myself. And in front of me, I was realising the game I loved playing as a kid and wanted to be a footballer. You know, I'd completely wasted that due to my decisions and lifestyle. You know, ultimately, I think I just couldn't go on anymore. I'd had enough, you know, physically, mentally, and I went and got help.
And then that help led to you quitting the game and becoming a coach. And so do you have a roadmap? Do you have a sort of target for the next 5 years, next 10 years?
As long as I keep progressing, as long as I'm moving to bigger jobs, you know, it might be in Belgium, or it might be in Holland, or it might be in Spain, or it might be in Colombia. And it's also good, it's exciting, and it's an adventure. And you know, coming to Bahrain, it's been a fantastic year. It really has been a fantastic year here, and I've made some, you know, had some great relationships here, and it's a blessing to be in a country like this, a different culture, and to come here and work for a national team in someone else's country and on behalf of their country is special, and it's a great experience. You know, she's perfect for me right now.
And ultimately, the big target, the dream job is?
Well, the big job is one of the big clubs, you know, Chelsea, Man United, you know, Madrid's. That's the target, and I don't think there's any point in doing it if you're not going to aim for the very top. But time's on my side, and I'm looking forward to it. But as of today, I'm exactly where I need to be right now. This is perfect for me right now. But who knows what's going to be down the line.
And it'll be quite something if you do become the Chelsea manager, given that your dad is one of the club's legends.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic. And I used to go there when I was younger, and a Chelsea manager would be a dream come true. But I do believe that dreams do come true, and I do believe that these things are possible. And that's certainly, on a daily basis, what I think about and the aim. That's the aim.
The coach of Bahrain's under-23 team, Anthony Hudson. And that's all for this week from South Korea. Remember, if you want to download World Football, just go to our website at bbcworldservice.com/sport and follow the links to the World Football page. And you can also follow us on Twitter at @WSWorldFootball. Join us again at the same time next week. But until then, from beneath the bamboo in Ulsan, which are just starting to whisper to each other in a gentle breeze, always remember, World Service, World Football.